This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9 wishes to advise the following broadcast event is part of a sexual health campaign for the GLBTI community. At times, there may be frank discussions on a range of topics, including methods for safe sex, symptoms of sexually transmitted infections, and other topics targeted to the people who are sexually active. Listener's discretion is advised.
Thanks to funding from Family Planning Victoria, Australia's only gay and lesbian community radio station, Joy 94.9, travelled to Shepparton on Sunday, February 13, 2011, for an outside broadcast, part of Family Planning Victoria's Sexual Health and Diversity Enterprise campaign. The Shades of Joy broadcast was a sexual health information forum held at Uniting Care Cutting Edge in Shepparton. The Shade campaign aims to raise awareness of sexually transmitted infections and bloodborne viruses in same-sex attracted young people in regional Victoria and their social networks.
I'm at Shades of Joy in Shepparton, part of Joy's broadcast around sexual health and diversity, and I have with me two young gentlemen that are locals. Your name, please?
Paul. Andrew.
Paul and Andrew. Now, how old are you both?
18.
26.
And you're both locals? You both live here all your life?
No, originally from Ballarat, been here for the last 8 years.
Right, you've gone backwards.
Yes.
Okay. And what about you, Paul?
I've been in here for 4 years. I lived in Bendigo first.
That's my hometown. I'm sorry for you. Now, living in rural regional Victoria, gentlemen, how do you get a route?
Manhunt.
Good answer.
I've had the same partner for the last 4 years, so it's not really a concern for me.
A very good answer with that one too. Very good, very good. And what brought your attention to this function here today? How did you know about it?
Via Facebook, quite good friends with Damien and been involved in the GB Pride and Diversity program for the last 4 years mainly, and yeah, just online, best way to find out information about anything these days.
And Paul, what do you find living in Shepparton is the hardest thing about being out and gay?
Nothing really.
That's good. Why is it so easy for you?
Because more people I tell, I'm more into it now.
So the more you share it, the more people understand.
Yes.
And Andrew, what do you find living in a relationship in regional Victoria? Does that have any challenges of its own difference?
I think it does in a lot of respects. People are starting to realise that we're very much the same as a heterosexual couple. We still argue about the bills and who didn't grab milk on the way home from work. So
putting the bins out.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. So people are starting to realise that, you know, we are normal. We have the same issues and the same concerns as everybody else does. And it helps with events like this that are tailored towards family as well too, so people can feel comfortable to be able to bring down, you know, brothers, sisters, mothers and dads and everything else. And, very family sort of environment.
Would you like to see more of these types of events that are inclusive of everybody in this community?
I think it's beneficial in the respect of, you know, we are one big family. We've all got, we need more family support from the Golden Valley area. And people are realising it is the country, it does take time, it is slower than the city. But yeah, it will happen, and hopefully having more of these events will make people feel like, you know, that it is normal, so.
Paul, when I was growing up in Bendigo, I was sure I was the only gay in the village, but when I log online now, there's hundreds of young gay men in Bendigo. I guess there's quite a few here too.
Yeah, there is. A lot more older ones too.
Andrew, Paul, thank you for joining us on Shades of Joy.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Shades of Joy outside broadcast recorded live in Shepparton, Sunday, February 13, 2011, only on Joy 94.9.
You are with Dean Beck and Kat Norden. We are at Shades of Joy, coming to you live from the Uniting Care Cutting Edge Centre, 136 Maud Street in Shepparton. It's a sexual health information forum for same-sex attracted youth in regional Victoria.
We're going to be speaking with Yair. Now, this is This stands for Youth Empowerment Against AIDS. It was founded in March 2005, and I think what's most interesting about it is it's a youth-led health promotion organisation. It's dedicated to engaging, educating and empowering young Australians aged 15 to 29 to lead HIV/AIDS awareness in their local communities.
Now, the development and delivery of YEAR's programs based on engagement, education and empowerment are built on youth participation and sharing that knowledge through dialogue as the key determinants. And it's there to support young people and become agents of positive change behaviour. Now, joining us to discuss the work of YEAR is Alana Cooper, Kat Bryan and Felix Scholes. Welcome to Shades of Joy.
Thanks for having us.
And so, guys, can you tell us first up, first of all, what is YEAR? And secondly, what is the real connection with YEAR and cows?
Straight up, there's no connection between cows and YEAR.
You ruined everything.
Dean is so disappointed now.
Blown the cover. So YEAR is Youth Empowerment Against HIV/AIDS, like you said, and we're the only HIV/AIDS organisation just focusing on young people. Like, VAC and the Victorian AIDS Council does a great work in the Victorian community, but we're the only ones that just talk to young people and talk with young people. So we train up young people to talk about HIV in their own communities, let them do their own events in their own communities in their own way, and put education resources out in schools so schools are supported to talk about HIV and sexual health.
Now, Red Aware is one of your outreach programs. Explain that for us.
So Red Aware is pretty much the campaign arm of YEAR. So what we focus on is that YEAR recognised over the years that young people really wanted to raise awareness about HIV and sexual health in their communities, but they never had the resources or the support or the capacity to be able to do so. So YEAR developed this program, Red Aware, where we can do that.
Now, where do you do that?
Well, we don't do it, but we provide young people who do want to do it in their communities with the tools and resources to be able to do so. And that we operate Australia-wide.
And what kind of tools and resources are you talking about?
So we have a toolkit.
Tools and resources. What's in the toolkit?
Cows.
And vegetables for condom demonstrations.
And condoms.
Yeah.
And can I say, you have the best and biggest blow-up condoms I've ever seen in my life. They're about 12 feet tall.
Yeah, we're a bit worried that some other organisation is going to come up with a bigger structure.
Well, I'll tell you what, you've outdone most.
Yeah, I think so.
But you don't have those in the toolkit, do you?
No, unfortunately. Would be a good one to put in the toolkit.
So what kind of resources do you provide?
So we have a lot of HIV
Shades of Joy outside
DVDs,
broadcast, recorded live in Shepparton, Sunday, February 13, 2011, only on Joy 94.9.
And we've got condoms and lube, just as essential, and a lot of promotional items to assist young people to, educate their friends about the event that they're going to run.
How do things like drink bottles help sexual health?
Drink bottles.
Drink bottles? We don't have drink bottles.
Oh, there's somebody else's.
There's someone else's. They might help someone else.
They're in someone else's toolkit.
Oh, right. See, I've got the cows and the vegetables and the drink bottles all mixed up. So you provide to youth groups, do you, or school groups, or who takes you up on this offer?
It's young people that have a particular interest in raising awareness, and it's no particular group of people, but I guess they found it out about us variously. So they either connect with the Red Aware idea. So, for example, we've been to a lot of youth-focused music festivals through our time. So they see our giant red condoms, they start talking to us, they get the idea of, you know, what we're about, and they're intrigued by it and they think it's really important. So then they might call us up later and say, I want to do this in my community, because we don't have the support or the ability to do so.
And I guess along with the condoms and lube is a whole array of resources, information, pamphlets.
Exactly, to go with it.
Yeah, great. Good stuff.
And you also have an educational resources section. What's that about?
Well, that's my area. And YEAR started out, one of the earliest resources that YEAR developed were educational resources that are based in a more formal educational setting. So they're designed for schools primarily and other sort of community organisations that might have a particular interest in HIV/AIDS resources. And to date we've developed three resources that are targeted for that sort of educational sector, and they are explicitly HIV/AIDS focused, and they'll look at things like issues of stigma and disclosing personal information that might be very relevant to not just obviously relevant around the issues of HIV/AIDS, but for young people in general. That's often relevant material, and other materials that are sort of more broad looks at the history of HIV/AIDS and sort of on a global perspective. And yeah, they fit very, very well into schools, and I work a lot with people like Anne Sexton, who you spoke to before, and sort of working with other partners and in the education sector.
So would you say that you're primarily proactive, like you provide these resources, or do they have to come to you?
It's a bit of both. It's quite a new area in that we're sort of really, really pushing it a little bit more now. We've got the resources to do that along with the other program areas. So hopefully we'll be being a lot more proactive. And yeah.
We're speaking with Alex Scholes. He's the Education and Resource Manager for Youth Empowerment Against AIDS. We're also talking to Kat Bryan and Alana Cooper from Youth Empowerment Against AIDS. You're with Dean Beck and Kat Norden. This is Shades of Joy. It is an absolutely perfect day here in Shepparton. It is stunning, and we're at Shades of Joy. It's the Sexual Health Information Forum for same-sex attracted youth in regional Victoria, and we're joined by Alana Cooper, Kat Bryan and Felix Scholes, Dean Beck and Kat Norden with you today.
There's so many of us sitting here. And there's also a barbecue, which is, I have to say, is really exciting, because I've just got back from overseas, Dean, and it was cold in Melbourne, and I wasn't convinced there was going to be a summer. But
you needed
today,
a banger.
You are so,
or was it a snag?
You are so right. No, not a snag.
You needed a banger.
We've been making sausage jokes all day. Welcome back, guys, and thank you for talking to us about youth empowerment against AIDS. One of the things that I was particularly interested in asking you, considering that you're such a decentralised organisation, is what kind of feedback do you get? Have you had any indicators of success with what you've been trying to achieve?
I think the indicators of success are the just you knowing that the giant red condoms are associated with, yeah. So the music festivals that we've been to, like Splendour and Groove and the Moo, with young people saying that we've seen you at festivals before, and
this is really an excuse for you to party, isn't it?
A little bit. But what's partying without safe sex?
Exactly, so exactly.
But also having more and more people wanting to become either peer educators or wanting to run their own Red Aware event. So I think those are the real indicators of success, that more people are wanting to access good HIV and sexual health information that comes from a really credible place of talking to your peers with really good evidence.
Yep.
Now, the youth of today are a pretty fast-moving lot with their social networking and Twittering and so on. How do you use those sorts of engagement, or is it more hands-on stuff?
Both. We're all over Twitter and Facebook, so you can find us through yeah.org.au, and that will give you all the links to where we all hang out. But also finding us in the physical world, either becoming a peer educator, an agent of YEAR, or hosting your own Red Aware event and in your own community. So you can find us, not just us, but your peers running your own events in, like, in Shepparton or wherever you live, you can be part of YEAR.
And that general empowerment, which is part of your charter, really does deliver community well-being and therefore better sexual health outcomes.
Definitely. So young people are all through our organisation. There's no old people here.
What age do you get kicked out of it?
You get kicked out?
Or not really kicked out.
Asked politely to leave.
So we're focused 15 to 29 year olds. Mm-hmm. So if you're in that target group, then you're welcome to be part of YEAR.
If you're not, piss off.
Or you just have to be young at heart.
Young at heart. And supporting young people to take on... Ooh, so early.
Too soon? Who cares?
Too soon.
Now, you're, I guess, funded by Department of Human Services, are you? Or Department of Health?
Mostly Department of Health and Ageing, so the federal government, but also some trusts and foundations support
our
initiative as well. So...
And how many people actually work for the organisational part of YEAR?
Well, this is three quarters of us.
Okay.
We nearly got the lot.
Nearly got the lot. So we have four staff. So we're very grassroots, very volunteer driven. So yeah. It's all about young people wanting to take part in something a bit bigger, something a bit more relevant to themselves. So really being part of, gives them that opportunity to take part in HIV community conversations.
Now, the youth are often accused of being a pretty self-centred, selfish lot. What you're talking about is something completely at odds to that.
Completely at odds.
Does anyone care with that?
No, I understand that, but today's youth are often criticised for being so egocentric.
Me.
And what you're saying is these are self-identifying youths that want to do better work within their own community.
Most definitely. Young people we hang out with really want to be part of HIV AIDS conversations that are just not happening, that are right for them.
And why is that not happening though?
I think it's just this peer education model and youth empowerment and participation just breeds this energy for young people to be part of this and welcomed into this conversation. But also, young people just like talking about sex, so why not do it with us?
Sure. And do you think, like the old model was to stick a poster on the wall and there was your sexual health message, do you think that is died in the arse, so to speak?
In some respects, I think they're also important messages as well. I think you probably need a whole suite of communication messages.
And what kind of communication messages do you use?
Well, we use a variety. So we'll use social media as well as, I guess, more physically focused media, as well as us going to festivals and doing our own awareness raising.
And if people who are listening right now would like to get involved and volunteer or host their own events or get information from you guys, what do they do?
The best thing is to go to our website, www.yeah.org.au. They can also find us on Facebook. So we've got a Red Aware Facebook page and we've got a Yeah Youth Empowerment Against HIV AIDS page. They can also find us on Twitter at @yeah_au.
And if I was a kid that was scared to go down to the local convenience store or chemist to buy some condoms, could I get in touch with you and get some?
We could definitely put you in touch with local community services that are not so, confrontational as going into your local...
That aren't run by your next-door neighbour's mother.
That one.
Right, great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. We've been speaking with, of course, the coordinators of Yeah Youth Empowerment Against AIDS. They are Felix Scholes, Kat Bryan and Alana Cooper. Thanks for joining us here at Shades of Joy.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Dean Beck and Kat Norton here. This is Shades of Joy from Shepparton.
Shades of Joy Outside Broadcast, recorded live in Shepparton, Sunday, February 13, 2011, only on Joy 94.9.
We're joined by Eric Glare, who is a speaker with PLWHA's Speakers Bureau. If only I could speak. Now, PLWHA Victoria is, of course, the peak body for people living with HIV/AIDS, and it provides education, information, and representation for all of those with HIV in the state of Victoria. Now, Eric, as one of the speakers, you get out and about and speak to schools and clubs and people in rural Victoria.
Lots of different things. I've spoken in Parliament twice. Probably 50 or 60% of what I do, though, is schools, mostly 15-year-olds.
How do they cope with your conversations?
Oh, really good.
Okay.
You can't tell who's the worst class or who's the best class because everyone loves a story.
Sure.
And that's the whole idea of the Positive Speakers Bureau, is that people don't really like to be lectured about sex, but they love to hear a story, and particularly if it's a true story.
Yeah.
And, the moment you start telling a story and you're honest, people are right there with you.
Do you find that the... audience react to you differently in country Victoria as opposed to in the city?
Well, I've been involved with the pilot programs in schools in the rural areas. Spent a lot of time down at Warrnambool and Colac over the years. And, it's interesting. Mostly, you get the same effect. If I speak to a class of 90 or 250 kids, something like that, you can bet every time someone will come up to me afterwards and disclose to me about their sexuality or their gender diversity.
And that's extraordinary. I mean, it's fantastic, but...
It blows me away because I just so wish that back then, when I was that age, that I had that confidence to come up to a speaker, or even to hear a speaker.
Absolutely, absolutely. What sort of difference do you think that discussing openly the issues around HIV has on those kids?
Well, I suppose it puts a real face to it. Perhaps people think we're a bit freaks before that. But some people think, you know, gay people are freaks.
Absolutely.
And is it, you know, it's even more freaky to have HIV, I suppose.
And, you know, around that age group, there's lots of crap going around anyway. And often gay and HIV are put in the same box anyway.
Yeah, but I always go out with a female speaker to give that diversity, to show that women can be infected. Mm-hmm. And one of the speakers that I work with most, a girl called Sandy, basically, we were both infected the same way within our relationships by people that we actually trusted. So it all happened so easy for both of us.
So for you, you were in a monogamous relationship and...
call it monogamous, right. But it was an honest relationship.
An honest relationship.
Yeah.
And got it through your partner.
Yeah.
Eric, let's have a little bit of look at your background. You're a biomedical scientist who has a particular interest in HIV and brains.
Yeah, it's a terribly ironical story. Yeah, I worked in HIV research before I got HIV from my personal life. And, yeah, to make it all the more ironical, I was doing brain research. I was trying to see what happened to brain cells in culture when I infected them with HIV.
Right.
But now I'm my own walking experiment. Yeah.
Oh, how lovely for
you. N equals one.
And the issues associated with... aging and brain conditions with HIV are very much at the fore. What has your research brought about? What have you discovered?
Well,
what are you working on?
I haven't done any research.
What are you working on?
No, I'm working on the public end now and my own little experiment going on in my head. Yeah, unfortunately, I've had to give away my scientific career.
Are there better advances, though, with issues associated with the brain and HIV? Are we getting anywhere?
We're starting to, but it's been extremely slow, and whilst the treatments have really taken off and...
with the antiretrovirals and stuff?
Yes, and so many people are living such better lives with fewer side effects than ever and less pills than ever.
Yep.
But the one thing that really hasn't changed terribly much is how well these drugs get into our brain. So,
Do you mean the effects that they have on the brain or how they work within the brain chemistry?
Well, it's both of that. HIV itself is neurotoxic, and the drugs, to some extent, are neurotoxic, but it's a trade-off. The drugs are far better than HIV.
Sure.
But that said, most of the drugs don't get into our brain properly. So this is the danger for these people that think HIV is a walk in the park and just taking a few pills where you go for your walk. For some of us... it keeps affecting our brains even though we look really well and rest of us is happening really well.
Risk behaviour, particularly with youth, whether it be in regional Victoria or in the city, is very much at the fore, and it seems that risk is something that we now negotiate, we don't negate.
We always take risks, don't we?
Well, we do.
Crossing the road here.
Of course we do. Of course we do. But, I guess... you're a prime example of someone who, I guess, was working around that risk basis with your partner.
Well, not really.
No?
At the time of my infection, we didn't really have a policy of full sexual health checkups. You went for a HIV test. You didn't actually go...
for the full gamut.
Yeah, and we didn't really have that regularity concept that's pushed today. And I think that would have, for me, probably would have prevented my infection, and it would have saved a whole lot of agony that I went through of do I, don't I, and so on.
And that's why it's so important that when you have a sexual health check, you ask for Hep A, Hep B, Hep C, syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, and HIV.
Yeah, I think if everyone was on board, we wouldn't have to ask so much, but you do have to tell them what you've been doing, I suppose, to some extent. But it's a great opportunity to have a reality check, and my partner... he was afraid, and I thought it was due to being in the military and the stigma of being gay in the military, which is illegal to be gay at the time. But even after the ban was lifted, he was still too afraid, and I thought it was all to do with that crap. I didn't realise it was perhaps due to risks that he had taken, and he couldn't tell me.
We're speaking with Eric Glare. He is a speaker with the PLWHA Speakers Bureau. We're coming to you live from Shades of Joy in Shepparton. It's at the Uniting Care Cutting Edge Centre at 136 Maud Street, Shepparton. This is a Sexual Health and Information Forum. Dean Beck with you. Dean Beck with you, coming to you live from Shades of Joy in Shepparton. And this is a Sexual Health and Information Forum for same-sex attracted youth in regional Victoria. My guest with me at the moment is Eric Glare, PhD. Let's just chuck that in for good measure. And he is a Positive Speaker Bureau speaker. He gets around and talks a lot on behalf of PLWHA Victoria. Now, Eric, you have the most extraordinary upbringing. Your journey from farm boy to being raised via a fundamentalist Christian family to becoming an openly gay scientist studying molecular biology, it's an extraordinary story. And now you're travelling the country as a HIV survivor.
Yeah, but yeah, I had to survive my early years.
You had to survive the fundamentalist Christian upbringing first. Well done.
Yeah.
How did that influence your life?
Oh, I think one word, shame. You know, it was just, even right from a very early age, my parents worked out something was up. And, they treated me quite differently. I had three sisters. Treat me rough to bring me up tough sort of thing. And
so that worked? Not.
Yeah.
but you would have had to have done a lot of work around getting through all that, surely, within yourself.
Well,
I mean, we all do coming out.
We have to, but sometimes, of course, we leave some behind and we do a lot of denial.
Sure.
And yeah, it has taken me. Look, it's taken me a long, long time to accept that homophobia was why I was treated differently while I was a child. I thought it was perhaps, you know, because I was the son who was supposed to take over the farm and all that sort of thing. And I didn't see why a gay man couldn't run a farm. So it's not really about that. I could chase sheep still, probably, but it said I'm not very fit.
It's all right, but anyway. Farmer Dave, he seems to do all right.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't think that's got anything to do with milking the cows.
So it took me a long time to accept that. It took a long time to really get rid of all that shame. And in fact, really, it was only in facing up to the HIV shame that I got rid of all the rest of the gay shame. And perhaps if I had been a bit more able to get rid of the shame earlier on, maybe
now,
things would have been easier.
Some schools of thought say that that guilt around being gay often leads to certain risk behaviours and ultimately people contracting HIV.
Yeah, that's not how I got HIV, of course, because that was much later on. But I remember various things happened. Lack of opportunity, forget condoms, it was just too dangerous thing to have around when I was supposed to be trying in the church. A few things happened, and I tried to do a few things with perhaps even pushing on, mates further than they wanted to go and things like that, simply because too afraid to really talk and find other people.
And often when people get HIV, there is a period of their life that becomes quite self-destructive as well.
Well, even the women that have got infected that I know of, they say that they lose their femininity, and men do, you know, they lose a certain part of their masculinity or their sense of being.
What did you engage in to get through this for yourself? Was it counselling? Was it?
I think actually getting on with my life in the first instance.
Yep.
That's what happened. I'd always wanted a dog. You know, I grew up with farm dogs and so on, and they were all part of my life. And I was, you know, as a scientist, I was too busy to have a dog. And so when I got infected, I said to my partner at the time, you know, it's the right time. We've got to get a dog now. And that was one of the best things I ever did.
Right.
He went right through to with me to old age.
Yeah.
He was great. Yeah. But, you know, I got on with my life, got my PhD out of the road and so on. It was really when I became ill that I really had to face up to HIV in a much bigger way.
When you say when you became ill, what happened?
I was working madly with my postdoctoral research and so on, and I came down with meningitis and had a fight for my life. They didn't pick up which virus it was, so they can't tell me that I had AIDS. But Yeah, since then I've had a brain impairment, and I didn't know that that day that I was fighting for my life was going to be my resignation from my scientific career, but it was.
And from that illness, how have you what residual effects have happened?
Well, unfortunately, it wasn't so much residual. There is residual effects, but then I went on to develop bipolar disorder, or type 2, which basically I have a lot of stress on my brain. And
how do you manage that?
A lot of it's learning how to cope with it, learning to cope with memory dysfunction. I might even forget my closest friend's name. Got to say something. Hi, Martin, how are you?
It just doesn't come out.
And no, it's just not there.
Right.
And with the public speaking, sometimes I call it a hole and I just forget completely where I'm going, even the topic.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know, I learned one thing?
I do too, but...
but I do it more often, you see.
That's senility. Yeah. issues around confidentiality and privacy, it's... medical issues with one's own personal health is something that we protect vehemently, and yet you're, and I admire this, out proudly talking about, you know, living with HIV. Is it difficult for you?
Not really. It's how it has to be, kind of thing. I went in to help first off, but then I really got caught up in the fact that speaking out helped me so much. And then I realised I'd crossed the line. It was so much in the public domain already.
Too late, she cried.
Too late. So my experience
now... And it's good therapy too.
It is, but now if I go and meet someone anywhere and they ask, you know, what do you do? Well, for a living, sometimes they say, well, I said nothing, you know, and, oh, I've got a volunteer career. Oh, what? And, you know, it's the public speaking in HIV. And so, yeah, I find I'm almost dumping on complete strangers, even in my private life.
I do it on radio.
so do I.
Do you get great rewards in doing this work?
Yeah, look, I think even if I might talk about my private life too,
sure,
which is even more, you know, the stakes are higher there.
Yeah.
The majority react extremely well. The one issue, I think, is honesty. The moment you're honest, you've got them, whether it's school kids or people on radio or when you're meeting them privately. People really appreciate honesty, and they can pick up when you're being a bit
dodgy,
skirting around the bush. Yeah.
Never a truer word was spoken. Our special guest has been Eric Glare. He is the speaker. He's with the Positive Speakers Bureau from people living with HIV in Victoria. Eric, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. You're with Dean Beck on Shades of Joy, coming to you live from Shepparton. This is Joy 94.9.
What's your name,
sir? I'm Harmeet.
Harmeet. Now, what brings you out to the Joy outside broadcast today?
I just wanted to know a little bit more.
Yeah.
Being from India, I've never had such an exposure before. Like, I just told Damien that since for 30 years, I was not much aware of the gay and lesbian culture, and it's only after coming to Australia that I've realized that it's so much around, and it personally, because I haven't had any exposure, any knowledge about what it is and how things are around gays and lesbians. So I thought maybe I'll learn a little bit more.
Now, I understand that you do a lot of work here in Shepparton with multicultural sort of communities, because Shepparton does have quite a large multicultural community.
Yes, I'm a multicultural project worker at Uniting Care Cutting Edge, and it does have a large multicultural community, but you won't find many people coming out from the multicultural community. But as I said, gays and lesbians are everywhere, but because of the social no-nos associated in the multicultural communities, people find it very hard to come out.
Yeah. Do you find that, especially living in Shepparton and I suppose especially in an immigrant sort of community, it'd be very, very difficult for people to come out as different or as somebody
yes,
else?
Yes, definitely it is there. And not only living in Australia and Shepparton, it's also living back home. Because we don't have, as I said, we are ignorant. We don't have that sort of a knowledge. Like, personally, I might not feel, or I might not I might not want to be discriminatory, but because I don't have such an experience or such knowledge, I might be, unknowingly. I don't want to be, but yes, so it's good if people can come out or can come along and get to know a little bit more, be a little bit more understanding.
Now, have you, come into contact, you said before you hadn't had much exposure with any sort of gay and lesbian culture in India. I'm wondering if you've had any more exposure coming into Shepparton, or if perhaps it's there are kind of similarities between how people are viewed in Shepparton and how they are viewed in India.
Yes, definitely. In India, I know of only one prominent personality who was a prince, and when he came out, he was socially boycotted. He was disowned by his own family, and he had a lot of struggle. So it was only a one-off case which I heard in India. And definitely, after coming in contact with Damien at Cutting Edge, I've learned a lot more. And people are encouraged to know more here in Shepparton, but back at home, it's a total no-no.
Now, I've seen you've got at least one child running around here. Is it important for you to be able to teach your kids, pass on knowledge and education onto your kids about other cultures, including gay and lesbian culture?
Yes, definitely. I have two daughters, and as I said, they're very tiny. More than them, I need to understand better before passing on the information to them. And I would like them to be more aware, not like their mum.
Well, I suppose there's a willingness to learn. Now, have you been speaking to a bunch of people around here? Because there's been a few people here with stalls and stuff talking about sexual health and all the things that we can do.
I've got in touch with a few people, and I'm still going to hang around, get some more information. Thank you for organising such an event here.
That's our pleasure. We love coming out to Shepparton.
Shades of Joy Outside Broadcast, recorded live in Shepparton, Sunday, February 13, 2011, only on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.